Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys get a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Doc Staples. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Doc Staples. Don't forget, you can also subscribe to this podcast through iTunes or your podcast manager of choice. You can also listen to this podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, both on the internet and on your mobile devices through the Seminole Sports Radio app, available on iTunes or the Android Marketplace. And once again, if you are enjoying this podcast, you can go ahead and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. Today, we're going to be joined by Buck Sanders and Tommy Ashley from the Inside Carolina podcast. This is actually a podcast that we did as a shared podcast. For those of you who do not know out there, I also covered North Carolina during the year, providing some analysis of their offense and defense for Inside Carolina through the Scout Network. So this was one that I actually joined them for their podcast. Going to go ahead and cross-post this podcast over, so this is going to be more analyzing things from the UNC side, but again, it's going to be interesting for those of you who are from the Florida State side for more evaluation of North Carolina so far this year. Particularly, I've done a number of breakdowns of their offense and defense. Go ahead over to Inside Carolina, take a look at all of the material that they've got over there. There's quite a bit. Certainly one of the more detailed and well-run team sites on the internet. So without further ado, I'm going to be joined by Tommy Ashley and Buck Sanders from the perspective of the Inside Carolina Radio Show podcast. I will have one more podcast that's going to release tomorrow, looking at a little bit more of this game from the Florida State side specifically, but I hope everybody enjoys this.
And I'm your host, Tommy Ashley. I've got Jason Staples and Buck Sanders, and North Carolina travels to Florida State, 3:30. Down in Doak Campbell Stadium. Jason, I'll go ahead and start with you since we know you're the resident expert for Inside Carolina and also Florida State guy. Your take just generally over about this game, the importance of the game for both teams.
Well, I mean, I think both teams, this is for Carolina, this is a program building kind of game. I mean, it's very much the same sort of thing as going into Georgia. At some point, if you're going to start beating these teams for recruits, you have to start by actually beating one or two of them on the field. And that's where, you know, you need Inside Carolina put it well this week that Fedora is seeking that program defining win. And so far he hasn't quite had that. There've been a few times where they've been close, but they haven't been able to break through against one of those name brand programs, and Florida State's right up at the top in terms of the blue bloods. So for Carolina, that matters a lot. This is a kind of program defining, program building opportunity, and for Florida State, it's basically defending their turf. I mean, not only is it a home game, but this is still, even though they lost by 43 in a very poorly played game at Louisville, this is still a team that harbors hope of climbing back into the ACC Atlantic Championship hunt and even the playoff hunt. I'm not sure that those are realistically going to happen with some of the injuries and some of the other issues that Florida State team has been facing. But it's one of those things where they won't be able to accomplish their goals if they lose this kind of game. I mean, their schedule moving forward is really, really difficult, and this is actually one of those games that's, in many respects, if Jimbo Fisher and Florida State don't want to take a step back this year, last year was a rebuilding year. This year, they don't want to take a step back, and losing to North Carolina in this situation, especially at home, would certainly be perceived as, and I think rightly so, as a step back.
I agree with that on the Florida State level. And, Buck, I feel like just saying, you know, here we are again. North Carolina's on the verge of playing a game, a big-time game against a big-time opponent. We've seen it so many times. What's different about this one? You know, this is a game that Carolina has to win to be nationally relevant, in my opinion. Even despite 11 straight wins last year, I don't think they ever really got nationally relevant. at all last year. So here we are again. Your take on the importance.
Well, you know, I think Jason summed it up pretty well. I mean, and we've talked about it. Greg's talked about it this week on Inside Carolina. There was an article on the ACC blog for ESPN, the title of which went something like North Carolina has yet to have a program-defining win, along those lines, I'm paraphrasing. And it's true. They've been close. They've been on this stage a few times now. They were on it earlier this year. And, you know, one of the things that we talked about earlier today in another context is whether or not the play calling tightens up in these types of games. Even if you think back to the ACC championship game, when the North Carolina offense really got cooking is when they got down by about 14 or more points, and they had to throw it. Everybody in the stadium knew they had to throw it. Yet they were still completing passes and getting downfield. So it's, I think, an interesting point to talk about, something we probably should address, whether or not the play call is more conservative in these big types of games. Against some other teams, we've seen North Carolina come out, you know, guns blazing. But when it comes to this type of game, I don't think we've seen that yet. So, be interesting to see how they, you know, attack Florida State. Do they, go, you know, all out, full tempo? Are they trying to hit them downfield early on? Or is it sort of a feeling out process and they play it more conservatively?
Jason, let's go ahead and get into that. I mean, I watched some of the 2010 game down there in Florida State, and North Carolina went straight at them with the deep ball and had a lot of success. Dwight Jones had, you know, a couple hundred yards receiving, I think, in that game. So we talked about where North Carolina gets their success. We've talked about where North Carolina tightens up against teams like Georgia and maybe Clemson early. How do you see it playing out in Tallahassee, at least from North Carolina's offensive side, to start the game?
It's a really good question, because I do agree that Carolina in general has, I don't know that I would call it conservative play calling, but I feel like what's happened in these bigger games is that they've departed from their identity a little bit. And that's one of those things where there's a really fine balance you have to strike as an offensive coach, as a play caller, when you're dealing with preparation for the better teams on your schedule, for the rivalry games and that sort of thing. And you know, I've talked about this on this podcast before, where when you're successful, you become everybody's Super Bowl. You know, if Florida State's used to being everybody's Super Bowl. North Carolina's starting to face that a little bit more this year because of how successful they were last year. But as a rule, every team has the three or four games on their schedule that they circle. The coaching staff, even though everybody talks about, you know, oh, we're just one game at a time, every game's the same, that's not true. You can't get everybody up and prepared, especially, you know, at a certain level of focus and execution. You can't get that with 18 to 22-year-olds 13, 14 times a year. You just can't do it. What you can, and the other thing is, you can't prepare enough stuff, enough special wrinkles and things like that for 14 games. Otherwise, you wind up not repping base stuff, your identity stuff, enough. So what you have to do is you save certain tendency breakers and things like that for those big games, for your rivalry games, for your games against the teams that are at the top of the heap. So if you're Carolina, we've seen this the last few years. They've always had a few extra wrinkles for the NC State game. They've come in and they've done some things that have been really nice as extra wrinkles against NC State. And then they've tried to do some of the same stuff against these better programs as well. So they've you know, come out and tried to do tendency breakers, especially early in those games. And the problem is that they don't execute those tendency breakers in those games as well as they execute their base stuff. And so it doesn't look as good, and it looks like they're being conservative and all sorts of things. And that gets tricky, because the problem is, if you go out and you just try to execute your base stuff against better teams, it's harder to do. So you want to have wrinkles, and you want to have that stuff prepared for that. But it's striking that balance that I think is the difficult thing. And I think against Georgia to open the year, I think they went too far away from their base stuff. I mean, inside zone and zone read stuff has been their base since Larry Fedora stepped on campus. And they ran the running back 16 times against Georgia with success, but they didn't run him enough. And I think it cost them the game. I don't think, especially after that happened in the opener, I don't think they'll make the same mistake in Tallahassee, especially since that Florida State defense has shown itself to be pretty vulnerable all year. So, you know, they've had that Florida State defense has been alternately otherworldly good, what you saw in the second half against Ole Miss, where they played better against Ole Miss. Florida State's defense shut Ole Miss down better than Alabama's defense did at any point against Ole Miss, which that tells you Florida State's good is really good. They did the same thing against USF for the middle part of that game. After the second drive, they'd given up 14 points on the first two drives, and then drives 3 through 11, 9 drives in a row, they held them to 2.8 yards per play and forced 2 turnovers. And then they let up their focus again. Given that, you've got a team that can play like that, but the rest of the year, they've busted a lot of coverages. They've missed assignments. They've been vulnerable to the run. If I'm Carolina, I'm coming out with a lot of my base stuff, because some of that base stuff is stuff that Florida State hasn't done real well stopping. Zone read. FSU hasn't handled it especially well this year. Some of the downfield stuff, Florida State's, I think, 122nd in long pass plays, giving up 20-plus yard pass plays on the year. Well, that plays right into what Carolina's base identity is, particularly if Mac Hollins is healthy. So I think that in that sense, the Carolina coaching staff, looking at that tape, looking at what they do, I think they come in and they go at their base stuff and try to attack Florida State down the field with some of their vertical concepts and run hood, and especially run hood and Trubisky on some of that read stuff early.
Buck, we talked about it in the other context that you referenced that'll be on the website, but I think Trubisky's got to make himself a running threat, maybe more than he has all year against a team like Florida State. And I'm not saying that he goes out and just starts running wild like the Louisville quarterback, but I think he's got to at least get out on the edge and make some plays, force those Florida State guys to respect it. Then it opens up everything. Your take on North Carolina's approach? I think a lot of people on the message board think Carolina should just come out and bomb it deep every time. I don't see that happening, though I do think they'll throw downfield more than they have in bigger games early, specifically Georgia. Your take?
Well, you know, I almost want to hear Jason's take on this too, because, again, when we were talking earlier today, Jason was sharing a brain with you. He was saying that he believed that Trubisky should use his feet a little bit. If I'm not mistaken, Jason, didn't you take that approach as well?
Yeah. Florida State has really struggled against quarterbacks that can be a threat in the running game all year. Their linebackers in particular have been slow to recognize and diagnose in the running game, and they've not been especially quick in the passing game in that. So the RPO stuff and the quarterback run stuff is stuff that goes at a weakness that Florida State's had in that linebacking core all year. And if they don't play better, then even you know, Trubisky's not Marquise Williams as a runner, but he doesn't have to be. He has to just be a solid runner and good enough to get yards, you know, 5-6 yards here and there, and maybe pop one once in a while if they bust. And that makes a big, big difference against a Florida State linebacking crew that has not been really good in terms of diagnosing RPOs and reading their keys and handling quarterback runs after, you know, off of misdirection and things like that. And frankly, without Florida State's best player, that's Derwin James, on the field, without him at safety, their safeties have not been really good at diagnosing run and pass. What they like to do is keep a couple safeties back and let those guys diagnose run or pass and then let them fly up. Well, they're so late in flying up that they're getting bad angles against the running game. So now they're having to bring an extra guy up, which then makes them more vulnerable in the passing game. So they've had some issues up the middle of that defense in the back seven because of some injury, because of some rust at the linebacker position, where one of their starting linebackers, one of the most talented players on the team, hasn't played in almost 2 years before this year. And you can see that. There's a little bit of sluggishness at that linebacker position, and the safeties without Derwin James are just not the same level of ability to stop the run-pass option type stuff as what they had when James was on the field.
Yeah, I kind of come out in the same place. And what I'm hearing you say, Jason, and I think what I'm getting a little bit from Tommy as well, is what you want is for Florida State to defend 11 guys on offense.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, Trubisky doesn't have to be Lamar Jackson in order to force Florida State treat him as an extra running back or as a, you know, a threat in the run game and have to defend 11 guys. And, you know, he may only get 5 carries or, you know, 6 carries, but I think North Carolina has to force Florida State to keep him in mind as a potential threat. And if they don't do that, they need to take advantage of it. So, I think that's where I come out on that, Tommy. And I think we're probably all saying the same thing here.
Jason, let me ask you this now. Trubisky can be that little bit of a threat, and people have to understand that you're right. He doesn't have to be a guy like Jackson that can run it all over the place against anybody. He just has to do it and at least show he's going to do it and have a little bit of success. But, Jason, let me ask you this. We know Hollins has been limited. So, say Hollins is limited Saturday. How does that affect Florida State's game plan defensively as far as, you know, being hesitant to come up and help or staying back more because of Hollins or other deep threats? I mean, it's a chess match, but if one team doesn't have all their pieces, and granted, you've already said Florida State doesn't have James, who's one of their best players, if not the best, but Hollins is a difference maker. We saw that much in the Georgia game, without a doubt.
Yeah, and actually, I think Hollins is the one guy on the Carolina offense, with all due respect to Ryan Switzer and to Elijah Hood, Hollins is the one guy who creates some significant mismatches, even for the Florida State secondary, because of his size-speed combo. He gets over the top so easily and so quickly that it's difficult to single cover him, even with your, you know, 4- and 5-star corners that Florida State's going to trot out there. So I don't know how much, if he's limited, I don't know how much that affects the Florida State game plan, because I expect Florida State to come in and commit to stopping the run and basically playing more man or match man type stuff on the outside with their corners and putting a little bit less safety help and basically basically asking their corners to hold up against Hollins. It just means that they'd be able to do that with a little bit less fear. Those guys, you know, I think it's pretty obvious at this point when you put in the tape that Hollins can run by just about anybody. I mean, they don't have Jalen Ramsey down there who could run with Hollins. They've got some good corners, but they don't have any of those, you know, super burners out there. They're going to have to get physical with him and make sure that he doesn't get clean releases. And he's gotten pretty good at getting clean releases to prevent him from getting over the top. And that's really the difference. I don't know that, like I said, they're going to focus a whole lot of extra attention. They may have to if he's healthy and he gets over the top a couple times. They may have to adjust their game plan at that point. But my guess is that Florida State will come in with a healthy amount of respect in terms of how they play him in playing man. But I think they'll try to match up with him rather than trying to shadow him over the top. I think they're going to try to take Hood and the running game away as first order business, sort of like what Pitt did, and say, we've got the defensive backs to be able to match up a little bit better with the wide receivers, and we'll see if you can get off tight coverage.
Buck, your take on Trubisky's performance this coming Saturday. And let's freely admit, he struggled against Georgia for whatever reason, whether it was nerves, the environment, whatever. Florida State's environment is going to be tough. But your take on how Trubisky fares Saturday afternoon, I mean, if he looks as good as he did against Pittsburgh, North Carolina has certainly got a fair chance, if not a better than fair chance.
Absolutely.
Your take?
Well, you know, I think this is one more opportunity for us to learn more about Mitch Trubisky, because do we know, really, if the Georgia game was a game in which he was just opening night jitters, first time out as a starter.
Set up to fail.
Yes. And so do we know that it was that, or do we suspect, or are we going to be watching for whether or not he has a tougher time completing passes against better quality secondary players? Florida State may have had their struggles in the pass game, but I don't think there's any question that they probably have better players in the secondary than Illinois or JMU, certainly Pittsburgh. So the windows are going to be a little tighter.
Not if they look like they did against Louisville. Those windows were 15 yards wide at times.
Well, yeah, I get that. But at the same time, I don't think anybody would disagree with the idea that there's more talent in the Florida State secondary than there has been against anybody that North Carolina played, with the exception of Georgia. I think Georgia's probably pretty good in the secondary, although they didn't look that good either against Ole Miss. But so I think it's one more data point that we get about Mitch. How is he going to perform against a team that has a high level of talent on the road? That's different. Now, the Illinois game, you know, I've heard Greg Barnes has said that the atmosphere there was pretty darn good. And, you know, I've also heard, and I don't, Jason, you can speak to this, that Doak Campbell opens up so large that the sound isn't right, like down on top of you, like it might be at some other places. I don't know. I've been there a couple of times, and it seemed pretty loud to me when I was there.
Yeah, it's not quite as loud as a place like Clemson can get, or University of Florida, the Swamp. There are a few places that do get louder, but I will say that especially now with the alterations that they made, adding the Champions Club or whatever they call it down there, they renovated a little bit. They've added a deck on that side, which has made that side a little bit more vertical. It does get pretty loud. It's certainly the second loudest stadium in the conference, and it's not that far removed from Clemson when it's at full throat. It just is a little bit less consistent in terms of total volume, partly because of the nature of their fans and also because of the nature of the stadium, where it doesn't hold the sound in quite as well as the stadiums with decks, basically.
Yeah, and so we'll find out, Tommy, how is Mitch going to perform in that environment against that level of talent? Now, some of the things that he did against Pittsburgh on that final drive are just unprecedented. A 17-play drive, we got a question about this actually on the message board, whether anybody has ever had a 17-play drive that consumed less than 4 minutes.
I think I've seen it a few times, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be pretty rare, But that's certainly not the rarest thing about it. Earlier this week, David Hale put out some information from his ESPN stats department, which I am so jealous of.
Join the club.
Because, you know, they could produce some incredible stats. And, you know, I don't have it in front of me right now, but it was something of on the order of Mitch Trubisky has completed more one possession fourth down passes in a single game than the rest of college football has done this year combined. Three fourth quarter, one possession, fourth down conversions. I wish I had his notes in front of me directly, but it's such an extraordinary thing. Some quarterbacks don't do that in their career. And he did it on one drive in a fourth quarter. So some of the things that he did were so extraordinary. But it was Pitt. And we know they don't have a great secondary. But they had to know Mitch was going to throw the ball, and it was fourth down and six or better.
And some of those windows were really tight. I mean, I went back and reviewed those, and those he made some, especially that one throw up the seam to Switzer. I mean, that's just a filthy throw. I mean, it doesn't matter who's covering there. That's a filthy throw. And then for them to throw – to have the confidence, the stones to call a deep out to the wide side of the field, to the left side of a right-handed quarterback on fourth and six, that tells you a lot of what you need to know about Mitch Trubisky. And then he makes that throw perfectly on fourth and six. There aren't that many quarterbacks in the country that can make that wide side throw on a 15-yard out to begin with, let alone do it in those circumstances and with that degree of accuracy and timing. So, I mean, that tells you a lot about what he's capable of doing. Again, the question is, I think there are a couple questions there. One is environment, which I think is overrated, frankly. You know, a guy who's going to be a good player under pressure is going to be a good player under pressure, whether the fans are cheering for him or against him. And I think we've established at this point that Trubisky, at least last week, demonstrated that he can handle pressure. He can handle playing, you know, in tough circumstances. So I don't think that's really the question. The real question is, can he keep North Carolina, first of all, keep North Carolina out of bad leverage situations? Because the Florida State defense is not one you want to end up in third and long against. Even though they've given up some plays, the interesting thing is they've forced, they're one of the top teams in the country at forcing three and outs. But on the drives where they don't force a three and out, their results have been among the worst in the country. So if they
It's almost like they lose interest if they don't get the three and out.
Right. If they win first down, they get you off the field. If they don't win first down, you're probably scoring on the drive. So far, that's been how the year has gone. I think they've got like 18 three and outs and 19 touchdowns given on the year. And out of those 19 touchdowns, it's on like 26 drives that weren't three and outs. So I mean, it's absurd that when they win first down and they get leverage on you, you're in trouble. And then the next question is, can Trubisky be accurate enough and good enough as a quarterback with the receivers that he's got to change that? Because Florida State's going to win their share of first downs. Is Trubisky going to be good enough to overcome bad leverage second and third and long against this Florida State defense? That's, to me, the way of reframing it. Not so much about the crowd. It's about leverage. And can North Carolina be successful in second and six and third and six and longer? Or let's say second. Actually, I would say second and eight and third and six and longer. If they can be successful, if Trubisky can have some success in those areas, then Carolina's going to have a real shot to win this game.
Good stuff there. Definitely something to watch. You're listening to the Inside Carolina Radio Show. I'm your host, Tommy Ashley. Jason Staples, Buck Sanders are joining me. Buck, let's talk about North Carolina's defense against Florida State.
And let's not.
And before we let Jason tell us all about it, I want to get your take. I mean, Carolina's faced some good running backs. James Conner's pretty good running back. Dalvin Cook's probably the guy that they'll face this year. And certainly the mood on the message board is not looking forward to what might happen as Carolina goes up against Cook. Your take on just what North Carolina needs to do to keep Cook from just running wild and making the game a lot easier for Florida State's quarterback?
I don't think that's the question. I think the question is, can North Carolina get defensive stops, enough defensive stops, to allow their offense to have a shot to win the game?
Defensive stops, including stopping Cook, no?
Yeah. But, it's just more than stopping Cook. I mean, they've got to get off the field. And we saw that late against Pittsburgh, and without those defensive stops, there's no Mitch Trubisky heroics to talk about. But against Florida State, the question is, are they going to be able to get enough stops? They don't have to get them all, because the North Carolina's offense is going to score some points. I firmly believe they're going to score some points.
Oh, yeah.
But can North Carolina's defense get off the field at all? And it's not a good sign that they're giving up like 47% of their third down situations. And Florida State is converting 47% of their third down opportunities. So you combine those two things, Florida State could easily convert over 50% of their third down situations. That's not going to be good for the Tar Heels.
All right, Jason, will you answer the question I asked?
So can they stop Dalvin Cook?
Can they prevent Dalvin Cook from just having a field day? And I think inside, in between the tackles, they can. The question is outside, and that's where Florida State likes to run it an awfully lot.
Yeah, the interesting thing is Dalvin Cook is not healthy right now. He's not fully healthy. Jimbo Fisher, Dalvin Cook, they insist that he's fully healthy, but if you've watched him, he's still protecting that right shoulder he had offseason surgery on. And there was one point against South Florida where he took a little bit of a shot on it and sort of grabbed it and then went to the sideline and got a little bit of treatment and came back on. So it's been pretty clear at different points when he's been, particularly when he's needed to run through contact at the line of scrimmage, he's been a little less aggressive when it's potentially involved getting hit on that shoulder. Now that's going to be something interesting to watch in this game. Because if Carolina can make it a phone booth situation where he's got to run through guys, he was able to do that a lot last year. He broke a ton of tackles last year to then get out to the races where he was a terrific between the tackles runner. This year, he hasn't been quite as good at that. And I think the shoulder is a big reason why. That said, I think this is, really, in a lot of respects, this is where the matchup, the biggest mismatch in this game is the Florida State running game against the North Carolina running defense. FSU is going to give up some plays on defense to the North Carolina offense. There's some places where Carolina is going to have some advantages there. But I don't know that there's a bigger advantage in this game than that offensive line, which is on its fourth. Through the first four games, they started four different starting lineups on the offensive line due to some injuries and some other things. They finally got basically the healthy group that they want to roll with against South Florida, and then ran 63 times for 7.6 yards per play. Well, if they do that against North Carolina, the North Carolina's not winning the game, like Buck said. I mean, at that point, they're staying on the field, and the North Carolina defense is going to be gassed by the third quarter, because that offensive line, which is big and talented, they've struggled a little bit, particularly as through the first 3 weeks where they didn't have the five that were their core group. But basically those guys at that point, it's not a great matchup for Carolina up front. And Cook is a really difficult matchup for that set of linebackers just because of how agile he is, how quick he is, and his ability to make guys to change angles basically as he's coming through the line of scrimmage and then get off to the races. The other thing, though, is Florida State's found a backup in Jacquez Patrick, who's a 235-pound bruiser, who quite frankly has been better so far this year than James Conner has been as well. Right now he's got just under 40 carries on the year, and he's averaging 6.24 yards per carry, which is just behind Dalvin Cook's 6.35 yards per carry. And, you know, he's been a guy that if they feel like they're not getting what they want between the tackles, they're just going to stick him in there at this point. He's actually taking some carries away from Cook because of the stuff that he's offered as that bigger back role, which is helping Cook stay fresh until later in the game. And that's another issue. So finally, I think the other thing that they've done a lot better this year than they did last year is they've used their running backs a lot in the passing game. They've done a lot of one read, get the ball out to, you know, play action and then get the ball out to the back out of the backfield in the flat kind of stuff. And that's something that that Carolina hasn't covered well so far this year. Those guys, I mean, you looked at, there were a number of times where Pitt was able to, you know, fake that jet sweep and then throw to the guy from the jet sweep in the flat, or, you know, play action to the back and then throw to the back in the flat. There was a lot of that. There's been a lot of that so far against Carolina this year, and Florida State's done a ton of it. And the last thing you want to see if you're a Carolina fan is Dalvin Cook one-on-one with anyone in, you know, with a head of steam out in the flat. And that's, he's gotten that look. They've gotten that look against a lot of teams, and that killed Ole Miss. I mean, Cook had over 100 yards receiving against Ole Miss, who was able to bottle him up more as a runner, but he got his in the passing game as a result. So that's where their offense is getting sort of multifaceted with the talent that they have. And then they've started to add the quarterback sweep as the counter to basically provide an 11-man running game against teams that want to key on Cook and Jacquez Patrick when they're in the game at the running back position. So that's where I think the Florida State running game in simplifying, allowing their offensive line to do what they do last week, and then including a little bit of 11-man running game and more stuff to the backs out in the flat. That's made them really, really difficult to defend for a team like Carolina that, quite frankly, has had some trouble in the front seven against, you know, those more physical teams getting off blocks and being able to handle top quality running backs, especially on the flank.
Buck, your recipe for North Carolina to leave Tallahassee with a win. You called it a puncher's chance in your Wednesday column on the message boards. So what does Carolina have to do other than score a touchdown every single possession to have a chance to upset Florida State down there?
You know, I think their best chance, and this is like saying the most obvious thing in the world, they've got to get a lead. You know, I mean,
hasn't been hard on Florida State this year.
You know, if they can get up, you know, double digits, or like Ole Miss did, if they can get up on Florida State like Ole Miss at halftime, then that's their best shot to win. If they can have any shot against Florida State, I think they've got to get Florida State off their rhythm and make Florida State do things that they don't want to do. That didn't work for Ole Miss too well, but I think Ole Miss just kind of self-destructed themselves as much as anything
else. Well, they also ran out of gas, Ole Miss did.
Yeah. But, you know, no question in my mind, North Carolina has to make Florida State do some stuff that Florida State doesn't want to do. If Florida State operates offensively the way they want to, without getting off of their rhythm or what they want to do or how they've game planned to play North Carolina, I don't see North Carolina winning. They're going to have to force Francois to make some plays that he's not ready to make. They got to force him to take some chances. And the only way they're going to be able to do that is if they have a lead on the scoreboard.
Jason, your take. I mean, I think Carolina has to make, even if Florida State gets yards, Carolina has to make them earn those yards. And by that, I mean make Dalvin Cook run through contact, make Francois make plays with his feet and make throws and contested catches. And I think Carolina's got to figure out a way to start forcing some turnovers. I think for Carolina to have a chance, they've got to force two or more turnovers, win the turnover battle by two or more, and put Florida State, like Buck said, in the position that they're not really used to. It's going to be tough down in Tallahassee. Your take on whether they can do it and what Florida State needs to do other than or maybe just be themselves.
Yeah, I think, you know, one thing is that both teams actually, interestingly, come into this game with some issues that both coaching staffs have had some difficulty at times letting their teams just be their identity. Florida State, going into the Louisville game, I was hearing from some insiders there that they were running so much stuff, so many different run plays and so many protections up front that they weren't even able to rep all of them over the course of the week against the various looks that they'd see from Louisville, and you could see it. They got into the game, and some of that stuff it looked like they were seeing for the first time, and I was told it's because they were seeing it for the first time, and it's because they got a little overcomplicated, overcomplex on that stuff, and they didn't just do what they do. They didn't just focus on being their identity. And, you know, Florida State's always been an outside zone team primarily as in the running game. And then they got into the USF game and they ran outside zone like 20 times in the first half. And you could see they buckled down and they decided we're going to get back to being, you know, our identity. North Carolina's had the same kinds of issues at times in the bigger games where they've gotten away from their identity as well. So that's going to be one interesting game there. I think for Florida State to win this game, they've got to play to their identity and they've got to keep things simple. They're a very young defense. Without Derwin James out there, it does look like Josh Sweat, who's their former number one defensive end recruit, who had a minor knee surgery a couple weeks ago. It does look like he has a good chance to play in this game, and that's a big deal for them because he's much better than their alternatives against the run at that defensive end spot. He holds the edge much better than anybody else they've got, but without Derwin James out there, and then if they don't have Josh Sweat, they've got three starters returning from last year's defense. That's not a whole lot of experience. And that showed at different points, and particularly, again, against Louisville and first half against Ole Miss, they were trying to do so much on defense with all the various checks and all this that guys were having trouble just getting lined up, and they were turning guys loose. So to me, Florida State just has to keep things simple, stay in their identity, and basically tell their guys, listen, you're the more talented guys. Go out and win your matchups. And if they do that, they probably are going to win the game. North Carolina, on the other hand, has to go out there and basically tell, you know, Mac Hollins, we're going to need you to beat one of those guys over the top a couple times today. They're going to need a couple big plays, probably over the top from either Hollins or Switzer, most likely, where those guys are going to have to make the plays that show why those guys are NFL prospects. Trubisky's going to have to play more or less mistake-free ball. He can't, you know, continue to do what he's going to do, and I'm not going to jinx the guy, but continue to do what he's going to do, or what he's been doing in the passing game and be able to run the football. I think he probably has to run it, you know, six or seven times at least for North Carolina to have a lot of success there. But Carolina needs to stick to their identity, run Elijah Hood, force Florida State to defend the run and all 11 guys in the running game, get a couple over the top to you know, test Florida State to see whether or not they're going to continue to give up those big plays. And then I think one of the other keys to this game is actually Ryan Switzer in the punt return game. If North Carolina can force Florida State to punt the ball a few times, Florida State has a freshman punter. And they've struggled at times on the year covering punt returns. They gave up one for a score against Louisville and a second one that very nearly went for a score against Louisville. And they've had a few that were iffy elsewhere. They had one that went for decent yardage against USF. And we all know that Switzer is probably the best punt returner in the country. I mean, he's one away from the national record. So, you know, the one against Louisville, the reason that that one returned for a touchdown is the punter kicked it to the wrong side. They had a, you know, punt left, I think it was, and he punted it to the right. That sort of mistake, and if Switzer can change the game a couple times, once or twice, as a punt returner, that's the sort of thing that Carolina is going to need to be able to win this game. I think that maybe get a turnover here or there is really what Carolina is going to need. Other than that, they're going to need to really win first down, particularly on the Carolina defense, to be able to get themselves off the field, because Florida State is really deep. They're young on defense, but they're really deep on both sides of the ball. And this is a game where I don't think Carolina should go turbo tempo a bunch. Because if they do, just like what Ole Miss did, Ole Miss went turbo tempo a bunch, and they wore out. Florida State wore them out up front on both sides of the ball. And if Carolina decides to do that, they'll probably be the team that winds up wearing out on both sides of the ball just because of the depth of talent. So this is a game to control tempo, use turbo once in a while to make sure that you get that Florida State defense on its heels. So you get a big gain, or you get a decent gain, then turn it on really quick to, you know, see if you can force some of the busts. But otherwise, control tempo, make sure that you keep your guys from getting overly fatigued, and then just try to make a few of those extra plays. And on defense, run blitz the heck out of first down. Force Florida State to beat you in the passing game, and just make sure you don't give that you keep Cook in front of you. Because if he starts getting into the secondary, it's over. You know, nobody's going to catch that guy once he gets there. So run blitz and try to get him before he gets started. Force Florida State into second and third and long where they're not as good with a freshman quarterback, and they're going to have a chance. But they're going to have to probably do nearly all of that in order to win this game.
Good stuff, Jason. But you going to stick with your preseason Inside Carolina podcast prediction on this one?
Yeah, you know, I have said all along I did not think that North Carolina was going to win this game. And I said that in the preseason. And, you know, the thought that has occurred to me a couple of times now, and this is an awful way to put it. I really dislike saying it this way, but, North Carolina has had these sort of marquee opportunities a bunch of times. And sooner or later, you have to say, you know, before I'm going to believe that they're going to win one of these marquee matchups, they got to win the first one. They got to win one of these before, you know, you really believe that they're going to win it. Be awesome if they did. A few people would be happier, but I just don't think this is the game where they break the slump of winning one of these big matchups.
I tend to agree there. I think Hollins has got to be healthy. If he's not, I don't think Carolina can accomplish what you talked about, Jason. But we'll find out Saturday down at Doak Campbell, Carolina against Florida State. Big ball game for North Carolina. Hold the home field for Florida State.
Should be entertaining.
Fun to watch. Yep, should be a fun to watch ball game. Guys, thanks for joining the show.
Thanks, Tommy.
All right, that's going to do it for us here on the Unconquered Podcast as well. Just a reminder, I'm going to have one more podcast available tomorrow to analyze this game a little bit more from the Florida State side. But hopefully this look more from the Carolina side was something that was both entertaining and informative for those of you out there. Once again, you can find lots more from the North Carolina perspective, including some good evaluations of how North Carolina matches up with Florida State at Inside Carolina on the Scout Network. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. I'm your host, Doc Staples. Thanks for listening. I made this.